Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 28th day of March, Anno Domini 2020, and you, you isolated people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 7 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. You've noticed Dave Enright is not with us. Normally, he'd be one step ahead of the law somewhere in the southeast, southwest, hiding among the mesas. But in fact, he's just, you know, he's too old to come out. We don't let him come out in this weather, but at this time. So give us a call. Keep a socially acceptable distance. Stay on your phone. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Microsoft announced on Tuesday that they will pause all optional Windows 10 updates starting this May. With more people working from home, it's imperative that their Windows devices continue to be reliable. And so Microsoft is pausing optional Windows. I love this story. Windows updates to make sure any future updates do not affect users. The move is slightly odd, though. Microsoft will continue to deliver Patch Tuesday updates, and so it will only be pausing the optional updates, known as the C and D releases, with B being Patch Tuesday. The A patches are for... The move also comes into effect in May, which is still quite far away. The move affects all supported versions of Windows and Windows Server products. Microsoft said the company is prioritizing its focus on security updates, so hopefully the upcoming Patch Tuesday updates won't break anything for Windows users. Delivering security updates is important for Microsoft, but I feel like it would be a much better and safer option to simply pause all updates until this crisis is over. This raises some questions, however, like what about bug fixes? After all, the last Patch Tuesday had dozens of bug fixes, I think actually 31 of them, some of them pretty serious. We understand why Microsoft is doing this, of course. The last 2 years of updates have been horrifically bad, with many updates bricking systems or causing bad glitches. Microsoft clearly wants to cut down on the number of support issues it has to deal with during the COVID-19 pandemic. It's just too bad that Microsoft effectively decided to give up rather than actually fix their problem. All right, so we, of course, have a poll this week, a new poll, which you can take on the semi-newly updated Soundbites website. Up there on the upper left under the poll is back. And the poll is Microsoft pauses optional Win 10 updates. Your choices are I install every update. I install some updates. I never install updates until they're tested. I never install updates. Why are you still using Windows? And of course, other. And if you picked other, of course, please leave your comments in the poll discussion forum. So far, we have 24 votes. Not surprisingly, why are you still using Windows is at the top of the list. But I know you will have more to say about this. And luckily, you can do that pretty easily if you just go to our website, soundbites.org. That's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. All you have to do is scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, and you'll see the forums. And under the forums, the second forum down, is the poll discussion. And currently, at least the number one item under the poll discussion is 28 March 20, Microsoft pauses optional Win 10 updates. So far, although several people picked other, nobody's actually posted in there, but you can do that. And of course, you can join us here by giving us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800 770-415.
We have a text message here from Carolyn, and it reads, do you still recommend Lookout Security for Android tablets, and do I need anything in addition to Lookout?
Yes and no. Yes, you do. We do still recommend Outlook for tablets as well.
Lookout.
Yeah, Lookout. What did I say? No, no one, none of us recommends Outlook for anything. Lookout, we do recommend Lookout. It seems to work very well. I've been using it for a long time, never had an issue, either with some sort of virus, but also not, you know, with it causing an issue on my phone or my tablet. And we recommend it in the Security Tango as well. So, yes, it's a fine product, I would suggest that you give it a try. It's easy. You just download it and install it, let it run in the background. It does whatever it needs to do, and life is good. Lookout is still the choice for us. Thank you, Carolyn. Of course, you can also text us. You do that, of course, if you go to our website at soundbites.org, bites with a Y, on the right in the top box is our longevity. We've been on the air over 30 years and 6 months. But you can also see our phone numbers, 585-966-5299. 1-800-790-0415, as well as our text number, 585-209-9010. That's 209-9010. The number in Bayonne, 585-209-9010. Look, we've been talking about this for dang near 2 years now. Microsoft has been screwing up every single update. Not for everybody. If your machine is generic enough, you have no problems.
Just enough people to be annoying, which is millions.
Which is millions, exactly right.
I think the last one you didn't have permission to shut down.
Right.
Was a weird conflict with an Adobe Creative Suite security check.
Right. And the issue is, and we've talked about this before as well, the issue is that Microsoft has killed all of their quality assurance people, the QA people. What they've done, what they used to have was rooms and rooms and rooms full of every conceivable hardware and software combination that you could possibly think of. And people tested all the upcoming patches against all of those systems before they released anything. And so you had a pretty good idea of what worked and what didn't work. And yeah, there were some very few comparatively really oddball combinations people might have that didn't do anything or didn't work right. But 99.9% of everybody worked right. And then a couple of years ago, Microsoft decided, we need to save money because, you know, they're only making billions a day. We need to save money. So what we're going to do is get rid of our entire QA department. And instead, we're going to set up some virtual machines with Windows in them and just automate testing against those. Well, yeah, no, It didn't really work out all that well because now you don't have some of the oddball combinations that people had. You don't have some of the billion people have Adobe Creative Suite. And they didn't test that. What the heck? So at any rate, the idea is
nobody
that
nobody shuts down their computer.
Well, and nobody at Microsoft does. That's exactly right. There was, and of course things work differently in virtual than they do in bare metal. So you really want some bare metal machines to actually test. So until everybody starts using their own set of virtual machines, you really want to make sure it's all working right in actual hardware. So at any rate, that's the issue that Microsoft is having. Excuse me. That's the issue that Microsoft is causing all of us. Is how that works. We don't have enough machine. They don't have enough machines doing any real testing to be able to tell whether or not a thing actually works. So it's an issue that nobody's addressing at Microsoft that we know of.
We have another text here from Mark from Greece. Mark asks, Nick, Spectrum is now using F-Secure for their new security suite. What do you think of that program?
I think it's good. I think it's a nice program. Look, we've said this a million times before. No program is perfect. F-Secure is a very good one. It has a lot of features. It's not one of the ones, I think it's at this point, not one of the ones I'm recommending on Security Tango, but that's because you can't get all of them. You just, there's a million of them. But F-Secure is a pretty good program.
I think it was pay only. They didn't have a free version.
Right, right.
But if it's being provided by your provider, then that's probably okay. I know Frontier uses that too.
Right. And it's supposed to be not just, well, it depends on what it is they have, right? There's F-Secure Safe, F-Secure Total, F-Secure Key, F-Secure Freedom VPN. So I don't know which of those products they're actually using. F-Secure is just the name of the company. But the theory is you could have just internet security. You could have just a VPN, just a key pass manager. But one thing I would suggest is that you look carefully at which one they are providing and make sure that you not only have internet security, but also antivirus and anti-malware. So if they're not providing the antivirus version, then you also need an antivirus program. And in either case, of course, you should still be running malware bytes regularly.
It looks like from Spectrum's website, it's the security suite, but doesn't specify what that includes.
Right, right, right. So, get that checked out because they like I said, they've got multiple products. And which one you actually get, who knows? So make sure you know what you're getting and provide the additional stuff yourself. And as we've said before, no antivirus program is perfect, right? It's that leapfrog thing where they block something and then they find, you know, the bad guys find something else and the good guys block and the bad guys find something else. So make sure that you do fully understand what it is you've got and have additional protections in place for your system. And again, that's per machine. So make sure you've got it loaded on all of your machines. And I don't know if they also protect your tablets and phones, which are also on their network. So make sure that you've got protection for everything. As we said, Lookout is great for Android. There's a couple of things in the Security Tango for iOS devices. And make sure whatever program you're running on each and every one of your internet-connected devices is both working and up-to-date.
One of the things we have seen is that some of the mid- to high-end routers now, the $100 and above routers, are coming with security software built into the router. So you get antivirus and anti-malware, even email attachment checking.
Yep.
In your router, so it protects everyone on your network. But it is mostly in the higher models. It's not in the $50, $20.
Right.
I saw one online the other day for $29. No. I don't trust it when that cheap. It'll never get updated. It's probably already full of bugs.
Yeah.
And exploits.
Yeah.
You want to make sure that any router you have can be updated. If it can be automatically updated by the vendor, that's even better. So you don't have to worry about it. So if you haven't updated your router lately, it probably needs an update.
Yep.
You need to check with your router vendor to see if it has been updated.
Exactly right. And that's something we don't pay enough attention to. We've said this many times before. Back in the day, you just had to be a computer user. Now you've got to be a systems administrator. You know, you don't get a choice anymore. So you've got to worry about what's in your router, what's in each and every machine, who might also be connecting to your network if you haven't properly secured it. Have you changed the default password in your router? If not, I guarantee you the likelihood is that somebody's in your system. So be very aware of that stuff and make sure that you're clean there. Oh, sorry. I seem to have left my microphone on.
It's also been kind of nice. I've seen setting up new routers lately that they're coming with a random SSID and a random password.
Yep.
Which is annoying because then when the people are trying to set them up themselves and don't read the manual, they can't do it.
Right.
But at least that means there's no default password for new devices anymore.
Right. So there's a pretty serious effort, at least on the higher end stuff, to make sure that life is secure for everybody and safe. So check your router if you haven't set it up with if you haven't set it up, then it's probably using the default username and password. You may not be able to change the username. Many times it's admin or root, but you can definitely change the password. And that's one that should really be a fairly long password, because pretty much anybody parked in your neighborhood can connect to your network if you don't have a good password on the system itself and then a good admin password to make sure that nobody can get into your device.
And I just read there was an exploit found in the Philips Hue light bulb.
Yes.
That allowed, at least it had to be somebody nearby within 100 meters, could get into your light bulb, upload a malicious firmware, then get your light bulb to attack the Philips hub, controlling all the Philips light bulbs, and then the Philips hub could then attack your main router, which could then start attacking your computers. So your light bulb is now a source of problems. It's one of the things we've said for a while. And well, and Philips has released an update, so if you do have the Philips Hue brand light bulbs, make sure you load the updates.
You have to update your light bulb.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's something that wouldn't even been spoken of like 5 years ago. Yeah.
It's a computer.
You know,
it's,
I have a malware thing because my white bulb was in.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly
it's,
right.
And it's a computer right. That has a really bright power light on it. But yeah, so we have recommended for years when you get these Internet of Things, the light bulbs and whatnot, put them on your guest network if you can. So if someone gets into your guest network, it's less likely that they'll get into your main network.
Right.
But it still can access the Internet if you need it to.
I just got 4 of those little smart plugs.
Mm-hmm.
So I can plug something into it and then Alaska or Google can manage
I've been
it.
Really impressed.
But I haven't even put it up yet because I have to set up my guest network and et cetera, and I just haven't done any of that yet.
I've been really impressed by the Wyze products. They have ridiculously inexpensive security cameras, $20 for a security camera. They take security seriously. They have update procedures in place. There was a few months ago, they found a problem on their network, and they forced a password reset to everyone just in case bad guys got into the network, and they have smart outlets, and they're now branching out into more smart devices. So WYZE. I watch too much British television. WYZE. They've got a scale and a smartwatch out now. $20 for a scale, a smart scale. Most of the other smart scales are $200.
Yeah. Yeah, well, when you're the company that makes the chips everybody else uses, you can do that. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Bob from Henrietta, New York. Hi, Bob, what's up?
Good afternoon. It looks like Spectrum or whatever they call themselves these days. Let me take you off speaker.
Please.
Man, where's the button? There it is. Looks like they're providing something called McAfee Multi-Access, and the splash screen on it says it is virus and spyware free, so that's what they're claiming anyway.
Well, again, yes, McAfee has good products, and the Multi-Access is a decent product. Again, make sure which one you're getting. You seem to have done that, and fill in the gap. So you want spy, anti-spyware, anti-malware, and antivirus. And if you're not getting all three of those things, then you need to add a product like Super Anti-Spyware, Malware Bytes to it as well. But in any case, make sure that you know, and let me applaud all these companies who are providing free antivirus programs or free security suites, because that's a great, great thing that they're doing for people. I love this idea. And particularly now that everybody's working from home, you have to be extra special careful that you're not giving your work network a virus.
Well, usually a work-at-home situation, the employer will provide the hardware. So it's their hardware anyway.
Right, and then you take it back to work. You join your home network, and anything lurking at home has now gotten into the work computer. So right. You got to be careful when you take it back
right,
to work.
Right, because you still, if you're using a VPN, you're semi-okay. But at some point, you've connected to your home network. Before you start the VPN. And so, you know, there's a possibility.
I just wanted to let you know what this has got on here from Spectrum.
Well, I appreciate that.
I just let it manage itself. I pretty much let Windows manage itself on updates as well. The reason for that is I don't really use Windows. I need Windows for one or two programs, but almost all web usage is and anything else like that is a VM with Linux in it.
Good. Well, but if it's a VM, it's still running through your whatever your host environment is.
Right, so, but if anything hits the VM, it's not likely to escape the VM sandbox and get out into the Windows world.
Right. That's assuming it hasn't got. But even so, remember that when you connect to a network through a VM, your host environment has already connected to that network. So that's where you have to make sure that that is secure, because that...
Well, my head-end firewall handles that rather nicely. Even, nothing getting in unless it's talking to me already.
Right. So even so, make sure that you're running all the anti et cetera stuff on your Windows box as well. I agree with you.
That's why I read that off you. But right. I just figured that was a good approach. I think it's a good approach. Just do everything on the web in a VM. That way, if it gets hit, okay, fine.
Work
the VM and build another one.
Right, and you said it was McAfee Multi-Access.
Yep,
that's a pretty good deal. Multi-Access gives you up to 5 licenses.
Yeah, you can put it on a number of different computers. I don't have all that. I don't think you can put it on phones and gadgets, but then I don't care. I don't use phones for the internet anyway. The screens are too small.
Right. Well, it does.
I'm not one of the kids.
Right. Well, it works on Windows. Yeah. It works on the Mac. It works on Android Mobile. For antivirus, anti-spyware, and anti-phishing. But for iOS, it does locate and track and a couple of those things. But that's about it. But it does a bunch of stuff for Windows PC, a little less for Mac, a little more for Android Mobile, a little less for iOS.
But if you're going to run Android, you got to trust Google, and I ain't going to do that.
Well, that's exactly right. That's up to you. All right, that music tells me we got to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with
Steve. Have a good day.
Have fun. Thanks for calling. With Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 31 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. We had a text message from a fellow calling himself Rob from Greece, New York. And he wanted to know about learning online for kids, stuff that's available for that. So, yeah, we don't know anything about that. No, we do. We actually do. Look, there's an any number of places are providing free. And I think Steve's looking up a list. Of
there's one. Don't remember if it was the county library system or a specific library that was doing free kids readings online.
Right. And a lot of people are doing that. A lot. LeVar Burton. Is doing readings online, and you can find lots of kids' resources on YouTube. There's also a lot of places that are providing free educational lessons online for kids. And like I said, Steve's going to put up a list of those things. But you need to be aware of something. Be very careful when you set these things up. Some of them are getting your kids' private information. Again, you know, the big players are fine, but if you're hitting a place that isn't entirely well known, make sure that they're not asking kids for passwords and you know, ages and stuff. You want to be very careful. There's a lot of scam stuff going on right now, and that makes it imperative that kids be supervised when they do that stuff. I hate to have to say it, but this whole COVID-19 thing is a boon to the scammers.
I've already read that the stimulus scams have started. Click here to register to get your check, or call this phone number to register to get you. You don't need to do any of that. The IRS already has your information.
Believe me, the IRS has your information. They don't need you to do a dang thing. But yeah, it's a real, we generally have people taking advantage of situations like this, but this being a pandemic is, bringing them all out of the woodwork. So be very careful who you believe about what you click on, where you go. If you get any sort of information through Facebook or your email or whatever about COVID-19, the coronavirus, don't click on it. Honestly, don't click on it. Go to cdc.gov, go to the Monroe County website. You can see how many cases there are in Monroe County, and at the CDC website, you can see how many cases there are in the world. And those things are available for free, and they're at well-known and good sites. So don't click on it. I don't care what they say. And certainly don't believe the idiots who are telling you how you can cure it with whatever, because you can't. That's simple enough.
People have died trying these stupid cures.
Yep. So be very careful. Be very aware in terms of video conferencing stuff. There are a lot of them out there as well. I actually started to put a page together. I did that. I started to put a page together, and then I realized, so that people could, you know, see what's available out there. But doggone it, there's so many of them, and they're all kind of weird in their own way. But, you know, you get stuff directly on your phone. So, for example, Apple FaceTime is free. It's easy to use. Works on iPhones, iPads, and Macintosh computers. You can have up to 32 people, which you really don't want on your phone. You really don't want that on your phone.
The person with the best device should start the call if you're going to have that many people on it.
Yes, yes. But however, it only works with iPhones and iPads. And if you're going to use an iPhone or an iPad, you're sharing your phone number with everybody. That may not be something you want to do. The same thing is true of Google Duo. It's also free. It's up to 8 people. Again, very easy to use. Works on every phone and tablet, whether it's Android or iOS. Video calls are in 720p HD, optimized for low bandwidth networks. There's a thing called Knock Knock, which shows you a preview of the caller before you pick it up. It allows audio-only calls, and users can leave messages up to 30 seconds long. But again, you have to share your phone number. You may not mind that, but then again, you might. Google Hangout Meets, Hangouts Meet, it's basically for business users, and it costs money, $6 per user per month for up to 100 people, et cetera, et cetera. The nice thing is about it, it's encrypted, real-time AI-generated closed captioning, which is amazingly good, by the way. And you can collaborate on docs or sheets or slides and et cetera, et cetera. But you have to be a G Suite customer, and participants get to know your email address. So for any meeting, up to 4 people are free. Up to 6 is $18 a month. You can share slides and play YouTube videos and run a poll and invite more people and take notes that get mailed out to everybody. You can encrypt. You can use an encrypted password to protect them. But it does require a download, but only for the presenters if they want to share their desktops. And, of course, there's Zoom, which is up to 100 people is free, but you have a 40-minute limit. And then it starts to cost from there.
And for God's sakes, turn your camera off before you go to the bathroom.
Yeah, there's a YouTube video of basically it's the Brady Bunch. It's 9 people in a meeting, one of whom seems to be on a phone because she wasn't seeing the screen very well. She at one point took the phone with her to the bathroom, forgot to turn off her camera, and the whole rest of the meeting is going, At any rate, that's there are pitfalls to these things. So the pros are it's really easy to set up. Of course, it's easy to use for both sides. It's compliant with HIPAA and about 100 other things, including the GDPR. But the cons are it has terrible security. There's a thing called Zoom bombing, which the bad guys wander around in Zoom finding sessions and then start streaming pornography to it.
They got in, Zoom themselves got into trouble a while ago. They would install a web server when you installed the client program to make it easier to start Zoom meetings. And the bad guys found that open web server to the public and started bombing people that way too.
Right.
So they took that part of it out. But I've also read on their support page is that they're experiencing an unusually number, large number volume of support calls. And so things are a little delayed.
Yeah.
Everyone's having that. Yeah. Cisco WebEx and GoToMeeting and yeah.
Whereby, yeah. Which is free for one admin, one room, up to 12 users. And then it starts charging from that. It can be password protected. It works through the browser. It's easy to use. The problem with Whereby is video and audio degrade as participants join. Some connection issues. It auto arranges your video windows, and sometimes that's just odd. There's no dial in, and of course, it really only supports Chrome right now. And then there's Mastermind Lounge, which is a
local company.
Local company learning online. Works right through the web browser. It works from one-on-one people to very large groups. We don't really have a limit yet. We haven't
found it yet. But again, the best person, the best computer should start.
If
you anticipate 100 participants.
The big thing about Mastermind Lounge is really designed for professionals. The whole idea is that you as what they're calling a mentor sets up a session that somebody else can buy. So if I wanted to teach you guitar online, Mastermind Lounge lets you do that. And they don't charge. They charge a small percentage of the fee that the mentor takes. But other than that, it's they don't charge anybody to be a member. The mentor charges what he or she wants for the session, and then the user pays the mentor through the thing. The nice part about it is it's what do they call it? The trusted intermediary. they handle getting the payments so that neither side sees email addresses or phone numbers or any private information at all. So it's really designed for professionals. The cons are initial classes can be a little hard to set up for mentors, but they have a phenomenally good tech support. So that's just those are just the kind of places that that are available, and there's a whole lot more that I haven't put on that page yet. But it's at asknick.com/videochat.php if you want to take a look at it. And I'll be adding to it as we go along. I started it and realized what an incredibly daunting task it was, and decided I'd done enough work yesterday.
Yeah. I looked up LeVar Burton's podcast, LeVar Burton podcast, I think it was LeVar Burton Reads. I posted it. And when he announced he was going to do this, a day or so later, he came back and announced, well, I'm having trouble finding public domain stories to read because I want to avoid all the copyright mess. And a bunch of authors, including Neil Gaiman, said,
right.
Blanket license, LeVar. Read whatever you want of mine.
Want.
And then they really were like, nice, oh, Neil Gaiman is the man.
Yeah, right.
which he is, but...
I got another text here that says, I don't know if you covered this, but the Greece Central website has a lot of online resources under the COVID-19 tab. A lot of school districts are providing a list of resources for parents.
Nice. Yes. You know, as much as we don't think about libraries as much anymore, they've stepped up. My heroes are still librarians, unbelievable people, working hard to make it all work. And the people who work behind the scenes, not just the librarians you see at the desk, but also all the people in the back room, all the people who work in a library and for a library. They're doing yeoman service, keeping all that stuff up and running, finding the resources to make it easy for people to get those resources and use them. Lots of places are providing free audiobooks, free books.
I read that Penguin Books has a blanket program for schools and libraries to be able to do online reading of any Penguin title. You just have to ask Penguin and register your school.
Right, right. And once you've done that, you're in. A number of libraries have suspended the, you know, only two books, only a week, whatever, whatever rules. So everybody's stepping up. The archive.org, the Internet Archive, has also suspended their rules of the number of books that are available to take out and et cetera, et cetera. So there's just a lot of that stuff going on. And honestly, people have stepped up. You know, people have really stepped up. And it kind of makes me proud. It's a pretty cool thing. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Brian from Rochester, New York. What's up, Brian?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Nice to see you together.
Yeah. Yeah. As you can see, we're on three separate screens.
Right.
Not quite as together as we usually are.
Right.
Yeah. I appreciate you doing the video conferencing report there.
Yeah.
And one thing piqued my interest, and because I was working around, I may have missed the answer to this. You said we're just started using Zoom for meetings with one of my groups. And the thing is, it's a church staff meeting. And you said something about somebody breaking into an open one and being torn.
Yeah. It's called Zoom bombing.
Yeah, okay. What if you're in a conference like that and that begins, just everybody out?
Everybody out. That's all you can do.
Okay.
Whoever started the conference needs to just end it. There's not much that can be done about that.
Is there a way to ask participants that I have to get permission to join the conference first? But then you can still be spammed.
I don't think it's that way because we've only done it once.
Right.
Everybody's
right.
new at it.
some do have that feature. Not all of them, and Zoom does not, that I know of. Again, I use Mastermind Lounge. I don't use Zoom, so I haven't done much in Zoom. But yeah, the problem that they're having is because it's a public protocol, it's easy for people to break in.
Break into it, right?
Yeah. It's something to be aware of. There's nothing about them getting into your machine or any of that stuff. It's really just seeing stuff that you may not particularly care to see, and particularly during a church meeting.
Yeah,
yeah, it would be a little off-putting.
There are a couple of settings the host of the meeting can do to help cut down on that. There's a host-only option, and a join before host, so that the host has to approve people in the chat. It adds more work for the host, but
it
can help.
And that's host-only. So that was host-only feature?
Yeah. And there's another one called join before host. So when whoever starts the Zoom as the host has those options when they're creating the channel.
Okay.
So they can say nobody can get in before me.
Yeah.
And I have to approve everybody who comes in.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
All right. So I'll have her take a look at that, make sure we're all doing the same thing, kind of, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Everybody knows if something shows up, mention it, and everybody out. We'll start again.
Well, exactly right. I mean, that's kind of the thing that has to be done nowadays, you know. It's a sad reality, but it is reality.
Well, thank you for your help, gentlemen.
All right, sir. Have a good time. Stay safe. Stay healthy.
Yeah. Don't touch each other, please.
Exactly.
Okay, talk to you later.
All right. Bye-bye. So, yeah, the fact is that we're seeing a lot more people using things like Zoom and everything else. And that's one of the issues with most of these. There is a convenient mode, which has no security and et cetera, et cetera.
For regular folk.
For regular folk. And then there are the things that you can do to keep it more secure, but that takes a certain level of expertise and a certain level of willingness to set that nonsense up. So, you have to be fairly careful with those things. I don't think we have time. Do we have time? I don't think we do.
We got about 6 minutes.
Oh, 6 minutes. Okay, then. We'll go and talk to Sam from Rochester, New York. What's up, Sam?
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my phone call. I had a computer from upstairs that I brought downstairs. All right. I'm a different printer. I can't adapt this computer I have downstairs to my computer I have downstairs. It's got a check mark when it says get the right printer, but it doesn't print. Am I saying that right?
Yeah. So you had it upstairs.
Yes.
Could it connect to that printer downstairs?
No.
So then you brought it.
Another computer that I brought upstairs.
Okay.
I just swapped them. I swapped the computers, but this computer from upstairs doesn't work on the printer from downstairs.
Is the computer hosting the printer, or is the printer directly on the network?
The printer is directly on the network. Yeah, because when I pop it up here on different equipment, the printer, it shows the printer.
Yeah,
on the site.
It shouldn't matter. It's physical location.
And I thought it would work. It doesn't work.
Yeah, the physical location shouldn't matter then.
No, it shouldn't.
So if the printer was USB connected to one computer, then the other computer wouldn't necessarily see it.
So
but
are
it's
you
Wi-Fi.
Saying, right. Yeah. So are you saying that on the downstairs computer,
yes,
you can see the printer, but you can't print to it?
Well, when I had the printer, the original equipment from here, the printer that I have now upstairs was printing okay with this printer. I swapped the computers.
Yeah, that's not the question I asked.
I brought downstairs. Now the this one here does not work.
Okay, that's not the question I asked, Sam. Here's the question: when you go in to look at the list of printers on the downstairs computer,
that doesn't work.
That doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
Do you see the downstairs printer on that list?
Yes.
Okay, and it says it's connected, but it doesn't print.
Okay.
Is there an error message?
No, I don't see it. I'm going to try and look at it. Try and look at it now, guys. I don't see it here. Computer panel. I'm on devices and printers. I got HP 3510 series check mark, which is my printer, 3510. I got a check mark on the control panel, hardware and sound, devices and printer.
Okay, and that 3510 is the downstairs printer.
Correct.
Okay,
remove and re-add it.
That's what I was going to say. The best thing to do is to remove the printer and let the computer find it again and re-add it. And that should clear up whatever issue you're currently having.
Okay. Guys, I also got an HP 3510 series. And right next to it, I got an HP 3510 series. And parentheses got copy two.
So that may be the one that prints. It saw it twice. And so one works and one doesn't. So delete both of them.
Right.
So you add back only the right one.
Right. That's the thing to do.
Okay.
Give that a try.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Sam.
Beautiful. Thank you. I appreciate it, guys.
No, thank you.
It can also be tricky if you have two printers of a same or similar model. It's getting the computer to differentiate which one you mean.
Right.
You know, if this is a 3510 and that's a 3512.
Right.
I don't know what to do because it's 3510 series.
One thing you can do is to give them different names.
Right, which is harder to do. It doesn't happen by default.
Right, yeah. Right. But if you do that, you at least know which one you're printing to. I've said this before when I was still working for a living. I named my printer Wastebasket so that people wouldn't print. Who prints to the wastebasket? So... That's the kind of thing you got to do. All right, that music tells me you wasted an hour of your life with this nonsense. But don't go away. There's a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe coming up with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 59 minutes after the hour on this slightly isolated edition of Sound Bites. Stay warm, stay comfortable, stay safe, stay dry. And stay listening, and we'll be back in just a few minutes. Take a quick bio break. I know I will, and then we'll be back.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District. Jazz 90.1.
On Instagram at WGMC Jazz 901.
Welcome back to America's longest running computer show, Soundbites, on member supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. The Amazon Echo users in the U.S. can now use the voice assistant as a first step toward diagnosing cases of COVID-19. The disease, of course, caused by the novel coronavirus. I will be using the Dennis Worster method of calling her Alaska so that we don't set off every one of them. For people who are listening, you're welcome. Queries such as Alaska, what do I do if I think I have coronavirus? Or Alaska, what do I do if I think I have COVID-19? Will prompt the voice assistant to ask about your symptoms, travel history, and possible exposure to the virus. It will then offer advice based on official Centers for Disease Control and Prevention information, as opposed to the crap people are spewing all over social media. The functionality is a step up from the information Alexa, was offering previously. Earlier this month, Alaska would list off simple facts. Amazon's announcement follows a similar move from Apple, whose Siri voice assistant has also been updated to offer diagnostic advice. As well as offering advice on symptoms, Alaska can now be asked to sing a song for 20 seconds to help you know when you've properly washed your hands. Alaska's subpar singing voice means we can't see people using the feature much for themselves, but it might motivate children. Amazon says the feature is available in Australia, Brazil, Canada, France, India, the UK, and the US. Google has also added a similar hand-washing timer to its voice assistant. More generally, Amazon has also kept its fulfillment centers running, which has helped populations to follow shelter-at-home mandates. However, in some cases, concerns have been raised about how it's gone about this. Workers in the company's warehouses, which are still operating to fulfill orders, include the delivery of COVID-19 test kits in the UK, not in America, of course, but in the UK, and they have reported that management hasn't been proactively informing them when colleagues have tested positively for the disease. Instead, they've often been hearing about them through rumors. Amazon has also been criticized for not providing enough cleaning supplies in its warehouses, despite assuring workers that it has ramped up its cleaning procedures. So what's your favorite 20-second washing song? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. I was watching a YouTube video last night about various 20-second washing songs, and yep. I hate to do this to you, but the one that stuck in my head most was wash your hands, do-do-do-do-do, wash your hands, do-do-do-do-do. Believe me. Depending on how fast you sing it, you might have to go through it three times before you hit your 20 seconds.
The Star Trek opening narration is one.
Is one.
The Bene Gesserit, Fear's the Mind Killer.
Yeah,
mantra.
There you go.
Yeah. You too actually, can be Maud Dib.
Maud Dib, yeah. One thing that I dragged out of the depths, the swamp that is my brain. There used to be a TV show on when I was a kid called Concentration. And it was basically a matching game. But what they did was they showed you a thing for 10 seconds. And then you had to go back and say, you know, where the matches were. Right. But that 10-second song is in my head.
It's almost a Final Jeopardy. Wait,
yeah, right. Song. It's the same. It might be the same song for all I know. But those are the kind of things that you have to do to make sure you've got yourself properly hand washed. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. What's up, Tom?
Hi. Yeah, I know this is jazz, and you play a wide variety of music and songs, but that last one was a bit of way out there.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Free concert, and I hope I don't. I guess we're covered in terms of copyright.
Yeah, you're probably trying to expand your the things that you do on the radio here.
Right.
You want a regular program now with music. Here's my question. I just signed up and got installed Greenlight.
Oh, nice.
And the thing is, though, the expectation is to get, you know, something like well over 100 megabits per second download speed and something like at least 50 or so upload. And I'm finding just the opposite. The download speed is running only between 1 and 10 megabits per second, and the upload speed is running close to 20 megabits per second. By the way, they're both pretty low.
Right. Yeah, I would get somebody back to test your equipment.
Are you directly connecting to the Greenlight router, or do you have your own router in the middle?
Well, I do have my own router. Yes, and the router that I have is a TP-Link WDR3600. It's also called a TL600. And I'm wondering whether that's the problem.
It might be. So the first thing to do is connect directly one computer to the ONT, to the optical network terminal, the little box that they gave you
That's being called router because that's a word everybody knows.
The green light router.
It's routing traffic from their network to yours.
So it's a router.
Modem is what you mean, the green light modem.
The green light modem, yeah, absolutely. So connect directly to the green light modem. Just plug the Ethernet cable into your computer and try that. There are a number of places you can go to. I tend to use speed test.
Speedtest.net.
Speedtest.net. Right. And what's interesting about all of this, okay, is right now with everybody working from home, the entire internet is slower than it should be. So while you may in fact be getting your 100 megabit or gigabit or whatever it is you're getting, you may find that in fact the network is slower because of all the stuff between you and them. And there's nothing anyone can do about that. So, for example, I just did this yesterday. At 3 a.m., I had about a 25% speed increase over about 3 p.m. So, you know, you get it depends on your time of day. It depends on who else is. It depends on where you go. So, for example, I run the speed test, and you can pick your own server. I find that when I connect to RIT's server, I get a much faster rate of speed than when I connect to Syracuse or Buffalo or one of those places. Unfortunately, the speed test will give you an indication of what your speed might be, but not the final answer. And there's while Greenlight may well be giving you your 750 meg or your gigabit or whatever it is you're paying for, you may not be seeing that farther up the line. And of course, no internet service provider has a way to fix that. That's just the way the world works.
But I would expect something, even with all that congestion, you know, one or two is terrible when you should be getting 500.
Well, exactly. That's why I'm saying try that connection directly from your modem to your computer, and that will tell you if the router is the problem. If it's not,
bad Ethernet cable too.
It could be the Ethernet cable, so try a different cable.
Is it an 8-wire cable or only a 4-wire cable?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So try all of those solutions first, and if it does seem that the problem is your modem, call the folks at Greenlight. They will be happy to make it right.
Right. Now the router that I have it's about, I'd say, 5 to 6 years old. With something that old or that young, whatever you want to call it, the suspect in this case of the cause of the slow speed?
Yeah, it certainly could be. I would do the troubleshooting first, because that will definitely help. That will definitely tell you.
I also noticed that the server that's being used is in New York City. Would that make a difference?
Absolutely. Like I said, the server that you pick.
I didn't pick it. It just was that.
You can change the server.
It tries to pick one physically close to you, because that's the best test to use. But sometimes it misses.
Is that picked through the speed test program that you're using, or is that picked?
Yes.
Well, that's the other thing.
That speed test, there's a change server button when it tells you what server you're going to test to.
Right. Yeah. I sometimes only see it after I've made the test. Okay. I can then change the server and retest. But I've got a list of a half a dozen speed test.
Speedof.me is another one I liked. In fact, they were one of the first ones I saw that were HTML only and didn't require Flash. So I really liked them then.
What was the last one that you mentioned? Speed?
Speedof.me.
Speedof?
Speedof.
Oh, of.
Yeah.
Right, the speed of me.
I see.
There's an internet test from Netflix. There's the speedtest.net.
That's a good one, yeah.
Fast.com. There's just a dozen of them. And what I have found is they all give different numbers.
But they should be generally in about the same.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, depending on the traffic.
Exactly. Depends on the traffic that they're having. So I generally test about 3 or 4 of them. And I find that, again, at 3 in the morning, I get pretty dang close to my speed. Okay. At 3 in the afternoon, I can be significantly lower, but certainly not down to the 1 or 2 megabits you're talking.
And that used to be, that's because when the kids got home from school and got on the internet,
Right.
Well, now everyone is on the internet all day long.
Yeah. Right. So,
and video
yeah.
conferencing has skyrocketed, and that uses a lot of bandwidth.
So, I suspect you are having a real issue, and I would do that troubleshooting before I do anything else. But beyond that, for everyone else listening, you're likely not going to see your speed test give you the numbers you're expecting, and it's not your internet service provider's fault. It's actually more to do with the congestion everywhere on the entire internet right now.
Okay.
One of the things that we're seeing is that Facebook is just failing left and right. They were not ready. They were not ready for the increase.
Yeah. Well, I've read that both Facebook and Twitter, their usage has skyrocketed, you know, hundreds of percent. But their ad revenue is way down because no one's out buying anything. So the advertisers don't want to spend money on ads.
Right. Right. And it's an issue that people are having all over the place. But I would absolutely say do the troubleshooting part first.
Yeah.
Right. And then if that comes out even close to what you're paying for, be satisfied in these times. But if it's still very, very low, then it is a problem with your modem, and you should get that checked immediately. The Greenlight folks will be happy to set it up.
Okay. Well, thanks for the advice. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks. And thank you, Angel. That's very nice. The various situations. Oh, thank you. The various sites that I don't know if are you posting. Normally, I can see what Steve is posting, and I can say, "Oh, Steve's posting that right now," but I can't see it now. But there are a number of sites on the internet that give you your speed test. But again, I stress. Don't be upset if you're not getting your full speed right now, because it is and Greenlight themselves have equalized uploads and downloads. So if you're getting a gig down, you're now getting a gig up. But again, you may not be getting that because of the speed of the other end. So for example, go to Facebook and see how slowly it loads. That has nothing to do with whoever your internet service provider is, and everything to do with the fact that Facebook is just swamped.
I try my best not to go into first book in the best of times.
Yeah, exactly right. The reality is that we're not seeing the internet at its best right now, and that's just something we have to learn to live with.
It was designed to be distributed against attack.
Right.
It's being attacked right now.
By itself.
Yeah.
Right. We find that, you know, it's these load tests that find the biggest problems. And believe me, the internet's getting a load test right now. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is David from Fairport, New York. What's up, David?
Well, actually, Nick, it's Irondequoit, but that's okay.
Oh, sorry. Oh, it is Irondequoit.
Not to worry.
Man, oh, man. Clearly... I need better drugs.
The look on Mike's face when I thought I wrote down Irondequoit.
He did write Irondequoit. I just,
I'm pretty sure I wrote that down.
I just, I don't know. I clearly need better drugs. Go ahead.
Not to worry. You need more coffee. That's all.
That's exactly it.
Nick, with all this time on my hands, or supposed time on my hands, I have an older desktop that I'd like to dedicate just to scanning photos so I can get them all digitized. And I have a good program called ViewScan, but I tried, mind you, this is an older computer, so I tried using Linux a number of years ago without much success in terms of downloading it and then installing it. And I was wondering if you could suggest suggest a Linux program that might be better at that. downloads?
Well, there are a number of Linux programs to do scanning.
ViewScan is one of the more popular ones. It says they support 6,000 scanners. Maybe your scanner is not among them, your specific model?
Well, it's not. I'm just looking at the setting up Linux at this point.
Linux itself. Okay.
Right. Yeah. I had a real problem doing that, and I'm just hoping that maybe with a little more patience and skill I could get that computer running. Mind you, I think it had Windows, 7 on it.
Yeah, okay. So here's a couple of things. There are a number of Linux programs that are easy to install and use. Ubuntu, Linux Mint, and MX Linux are very easy to install. There are dozens of them, but those are three of the easiest. And I know I've just upset somebody who I didn't mention their favorite. But any of those is doable. And easy to do. The issue with all of them is getting it downloaded and burned to a medium in a way that can be used. And so if for example you want to burn it to a CD, you have to download the ISO version and then have some sort of burning software on your machine that will let you burn that ISO as a bootable device and then put it in the other machine and boot it up and you're on your way. In addition, depending on what hardware you have in that older machine, some versions of Linux won't necessarily recognize all of it. That's one of the reasons that I recommend either Ubuntu or Linux Mint or MX Linux, because not only are they all easy to install, but they've also got very wide hardware support. Ubuntu more than the other two, but
if you don't mind spending a little bit of money for a free OS, on Amazon you can buy pre-built USB keys that have Linux Mint on it. $18 for a Mint Cinnamon 19 bootable disk that looks like it came from, well, it's an Amazon choice. That's all right. Well, it's not telling me who's actually released it. But that's one way to overcome the issue of how do I download it and burn it properly to a disk.
Right. And then when that's done, you've got a USB drive.
Yeah.
So that's not bad.
If I recall correctly, I tried burning it to a disk and then tried a thumb drive, but I obviously didn't do it very well, so it because it didn't work. But and I think I downloaded Ubuntu anyway. So I'll give it a shot. But
yeah, it can be tricky because you have to get what's called an ISO, which is an image of the installer, and then you need a special program to put that image on the disk. You can't just copy the image itself; it has to be built as expanding the image and put the contents of the image on the disk. So usually something like Rufus to burn an ISO to a disk.
Right. And so if you were to go to Ubuntu.com and across the top is a menu choice for download, you'll see Ubuntu Desktop, which is clearly what you want at this point. And you'll have two choices, 1804 LTS and 1910. The numbers there are the year and the month. So 1804 was April of 2018, and 1910 is October of 2019. The big difference is that the 1804 is an LTS version, which means long-term support. They will support it for 5 years, I think it is. It might only be three. Of that particular one, and you don't get, you can update, but you don't necessarily have to. I don't need to download it, but thank you. Once you've downloaded it, then there is a series of guides and all of that stuff. But Yes, I agree. Getting it actually installed onto your system can be a little difficult. And when you select the long term or the regular versions, it takes you to another page where it starts an automatic download. And there's a link on that page that says help on installing. And that will help you through how to install it. But it is the trickiest part of Linux is the installation. And as Steve said, go ahead.
Yeah, it sounds like $18 might be worth it.
I was just about to say, as Steve said, for $18, you can buy a copy, install it on your machine, and it doesn't matter if it's 1804 or 1910. When you install it and you get it connected to the network, it'll do all the upgrading and everything else that you need to do.
And the disks look like there's several different ones depending on which you want, Mint or you want straight
Ubuntu.
Straight Ubuntu itself, yeah. There are installation guides and help supports and a lot of stuff that come on that flash drive also. Mm-hmm. And a boot repair tool.
So nice.
I always want to buy that myself. Cause,
yeah, I'm just saying the same thing.
A pre-built boot repair tool, yeah.
That's nothing wrong with that. All right?
Great. Thank you very much.
No, thank you. Have fun. This is the perfect time, by the way, people, to install that version of Linux on an old machine, because you're sitting at home anyway. You might as well be enjoying yourself and having some fun doing a cool new thing. And we're going to take a quick break while you contemplate that. Don't go too far. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Steve Ray, Michael Oden, who, God bless him, came in here and is doing yeoman service managing the board. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back in just a few minutes with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites at 30 minutes after the hour, right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you we're member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve, next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Steve Ray.
And I'm Michael Oden.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites. And we had a text from Andy from Greece, New York. Said a couple of weeks ago, we talked about Facebook container for Chromebook, Firefox. And he wanted to know if there was a similar program for Chrome. One of the things that I dislike is the way that Facebook tracks me everywhere. It has Mark Zuckerberg, who owns Facebook, has famously said privacy is dead and has spent the rest of his life trying to prove it. If you're going to use Facebook, you want to do it using something that kind of blocks all the nonsense. And on Firefox, I found a product called Facebook Container, which works pretty well. There is no Facebook Container program for Chrome, but there is something called Ghostery, Ghostery.
That's kind of a general block all tracking services.
Right. It's a privacy ad blocker, so it's got an enhanced page ad blocker, rather. It combines AI-powered anti-tracking and anti-block list, and so it's pretty good. It's one of the things I like is when you use programs like that, you find that they speed up the web page because you're not loading a lot of the cruft and nonsense, the ads that are all video ads now anyway, so they take forever to download and forever to run and slow down your machine, and you just don't see them anymore. So on Chrome, I would say it also that is also available, by the way, for Firefox and Safari. So Ghostery, I believe the current version is 8, I believe.
Yeah, uBlock Origin is a similar one to that.
And uBlock Origin is actually the one I was about to say that next. That's the one I use.
Yeah, I've used Ghostery before, and it's kind of interesting and scary watching that little counter, because it counts how many things it blocks
so
in the icon.
So does U-Block Origin, yeah.
And it just climbs and climbs and climbs and climbs. What do you mean there's 300 tracking things on this one website?
Yes, you see that number, yeah. You think that's a lie, but it isn't. It's absolutely true.
There is a Chrome extension called Block Facebook, but I think that blocks it completely, not just the tracking stuff.
Right.
So if you never want your browser to be able to go to Facebook.
Right.
Which is, so if you're installing it, if you know, on an employee's computer.
Right. If you're going to be using it yourself, that's not the thing you want to use. All right, to the phones. Our next caller is Bob, who's probably from Irondequoit, New York.
Yes, I am.
Hi, Bob. What's up?
Hey. I'm one of those people that was lucky enough that can work from home.
Nice.
I do have Linux. I had, though, to get a Windows machine due to the remote connection I have to get part of my work. My question is there anything better than Wine in Linux to mimic or to run a Windows program?
Not that I know. Well, depends on how much RAM you have and how fast your processors are. You can always install one of the virtual machines like VirtualBox and then run Windows itself in that VirtualBox to run that particular program. But beyond that, no, Wine, which does not stand for Wine, is not an emulator.
Right.
There is a commercial package of Wine called Crossover.
Right.
That's kind of more polished and easier to use than Wine itself.
But it is commercial.
$80.
$80, get your work to pay for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
they will.
Yeah, right, all right.
But what are they trying to make you run that doesn't have a Linux version?
Well, this program that I have to get connects remotely to their computer, the software that we use.
Oh, so you're not just doing a VPN into their software? No. Or trying to use
And that's the thing, a specific piece of software, and you've tried it under Wine and it doesn't work?
Correct.
Yeah.
Can't get it to work.
Yeah, many programs were designed specifically to run under Windows, or at least weren't designed to work any other way, particularly if they were written in one of the Microsoft languages. So you're pretty much stuck with that. My daughter had to do the same thing to do some work at her old company when she was working from home. She actually had to buy a Windows machine. And she's a Mac person, so that particularly she was grinding her teeth.
Depending on how intensive that program is, you can get some pretty crappy Windows machines cheap.
Right. But you do. The reality is that there are some programs that do not work anywhere but Windows, and there's simply nothing you can do about that. That's the way they were written, and
the company won't provide you with a computer.
Well, I did have a old Dell computer that I got it to work on. It was upgraded to Windows 10. So it does work there. I was just trying to get it into my Linux machine because that runs a lot faster.
Yeah. Right.
Windows itself, you're right, guys, it just doesn't work very well. I had to do the update because it wouldn't let me get out of anything. I did the update, and now the computer runs a lot slower.
Sure. Yeah. Absolutely. And of course, Windows comes with so much bloat, games and all this other nonsense that is installed automatically when you get it. It's nonsensical. But I do apologize that I don't know of anything better. If anybody knows of anything, let me know. But right now, Wine is pretty much it. And if a program is specifically designed to work under specifically Windows without because a number of them have Windows-only drivers that will not run under Wine, and that's just, there's nothing that can be done about that.
I got a feeling that's what it is. It's designed just for Windows.
Yep. Sorry.
No. Okay. Thank you, though.
All right. Good luck.
All right.
Yeah, we're finding a lot of people working from home and a lot of people buying a cheap laptop or a cheap desktop. You know, let me.
And a KVM switch.
And a KVM switch. Well, or setting up a separate system.
Well, a lot of monitors have multiple inputs these days.
Right. One of the things that you want to pay attention to is what are you going to do with this machine? Particularly if it's strictly for work, you can buy some fairly inexpensive mini computers that are about the size of a Mac Mini.
Yeah.
For a few hundred dollars.
And they strap onto the back of your monitor.
Or you strap it on the back of your monitor or whatever. But
then you've got an all-in-one.
But you can also buy an inexpensive monitor. You don't want to go too cheap on a monitor because you're going to be staring at it for 8 hours a day. But you can buy a fairly inexpensive computer. You can buy a keyboard for $20 and a mouse for $10 and a monitor for $150 and get a fairly decent monitor. And then another $100 and change for your desktop. And now you've got, for a few hundred dollars. If you're not going to be carrying it around, honestly, you find that if you look at the specs of a laptop versus a comparably priced desktop, you will find that you often get much more RAM, much more hard disk space, and a much faster processor for the same amount of money in a desktop, because you're not paying for portability.
The miniaturization to fit in a laptop case costs more.
Right. And if you're not going to be carrying it around, why are you paying to carry it around?
Although I did open up, might have been an HP desktop the other day, we had to add RAM to it. And it was a typical mini tower case. When I opened it up, there was a laptop motherboard in it.
Yes.
It makes sense. Why make two motherboards? You've already got a laptop motherboard. If someone wants a tower, we'll stick it in a tower.
Right. But yeah, you've got, there's ruggedization that doesn't have to happen and all kinds of things. And so you can often find a less expensive. And yes, you're now going to pay extra for another monitor, for a monitor and a keyboard and a mouse. But again, often those do not come up to the price of the laptop itself. And the nice thing about desktops is many of them are much easier to repair or add to. If you want to add a second hard drive or more RAM or whatever, it's often much, much easier to do it in a desktop than it is in a laptop.
And you may have an old monitor lying around, or can even use your television as a computer monitor.
Or as you said, if you've already got a monitor and you've already got something plugged into it, many of them have multiple inputs nowadays, or they have a switch.
I have a text in from Bob. Can you recommend some routers to use with Greenlight?
Yes. Oh, dear.
They have their own list of recommended routers, but pretty much any modern router will work. The one issue with Greenlight is it's so fast, a lot of older routers would only do 300 or 450. And now, you're getting 1,000 out of your internet service. Those old routers don't keep up.
Right. In fact, I had to do that myself. What I got was an Orbi, O-R-B-I, which is not an inexpensive router, but it meant that one router would go to my entire house. And so there's a number of things that you want to be aware of. You want to be aware of how fast your green light is and find a router that's at least that fast. Faster is always better. What's the area that you're trying to fill? The bigger your house is, or the bigger the area you're trying to reach, the more expensive, frankly, your monitor, your router is going to be. And then you want to pay attention nowadays to, as Steve said earlier, the more expensive routers have antivirus and anti-malware and stuff built into them. So that's helpful and useful for your whole house protection.
And routers like the Orbi and the Eero, and there's a few other one, are using the new mesh system. So if you have a larger house or you need to cover more area, you put several of them together, and it works better than the old repeaters we used to do, which basically every repeater halved your speed.
Right.
Because half the network went to the backhaul and half the network went to extend the range. So now with the mesh routers, that doesn't happen. And what we typically see is when the wires come into your house, they come into to one wall on your house, and you want it on signal on the other end of the house, right, too. So it would be really nice if you can put the router right in the center of your house.
One of the things you might look at is that Google and several other companies are providing mesh networks that the router and all of the mesh stations are actually Google assistants. So you get not only that mesh network, but you now have a Google a home, the Google Home, in that room as well. So you can ask Google to play music or do whatever it is you normally do with a Google Home. And it's essentially a two for one, whether you get that from Google itself or from another company. But there are, but again, make sure that you know what speed you're getting from Greenlight and buy a router that's at least that fast. And as you go up in price, you will get the ones that have built-in antivirus and anti-malware and et cetera, and that's important. And then the next thing is, the minute you get it, change the admin password. Change the admin password. Write it down somewhere you're going to remember it. Make it long and complex. That is to say, 24 characters, uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and symbols. It can be words. It can be whatever you want it to be, a phrase from a poem or a book or a movie. That's all fine as long as it's uppercase, lowercase, numbers, and letters and symbols. So the reality is that nowadays there are things called rainbow tables, which are, the last I looked, were up to 17 characters. So your password needs to be longer than 17. I suggest 24. And again, you know, if you're using something...
password manager.
A password manager of some sort, you can have it recommend a password for you.
Of 30 or 40 characters.
40 or 50 characters.
So you have no hope of remembering it.
Right.
We're actually seeing, some people are reporting on Security Now about websites that won't accept a 64-character password. You can only use 10 characters. What?
I know. I was on one of those the other day. I signed up for a thing, and it said, I'm sorry, you can't use. And I thought, what did I do? Oh. And then I saw it said 12-character maximum. What? I don't want to be here now.
What, are you still using a COBOL IBM System 36 as your back end?
Don't laugh. It's likely they are.
When they talk about the big iron, it's still running.
It's still 50
years later, they're still running.
And you know what? They may be using a more modern system, but their back end is still that stuff,
yeah.
And they have to be compatible. So when they go to save the password in that old system,
yep,
12 characters is the maximum. That's criminal in these times, but that's the way it is. I get it. But yeah, so be aware. There's more to it. Like we've been saying all along, we're at the point in our lives where we are all system administrators. So for people like Bob who texted in, there's more to buying your router than just, you know, this one's only $24. You really want to match your speed, at least, you know. So if you decide later on you're going to go up in speed, you want a router that will already have matched that speed. When I got the Orbi, I got the gigabit model. So I'm good for gigabit, but if I go to 2 gigabits, I'm going to have to get another router. It's unlikely that I'm going to go up to 2 gigabits anytime soon. But for that router, absolutely, you know, make sure it matches your speed or is better than your speed. And then make sure when you set it up, take a look at the specs to see that it does antivirus and anti-malware and all that other stuff, which the Orbi, I think, doesn't do, actually. But I didn't at the time I bought it a couple years ago. That was not an issue.
A lot of them use apps for management now, so you don't have to log into a web interface on a computer. It has its own app, which can make it a little more secure to set up with a web server in your router for management, it's possible that bad guys can get into that web server.
Right.
But if you have to have an app that has physical proximity to the router, it's a little safer.
It's a little safer. And again, the big safety is a good password.
Yep.
They all come with a default password, and every bad guy on the planet knows that password. So you definitely want to change it. But yeah, beyond that, the routers are something that more and more people are buying new ones for the various reasons. I do want to talk about we talked a little bit earlier about you know what, I'm going to read this one instead because this is for those of you who are in the tech field. While the rest of the economy is tanking from the crippling impact of the coronavirus, business at the biggest technology companies is holding steady and even thriving. Amazon has said it was hiring 100,000 warehouse workers to meet surging demand. Mark Zuckerberg, Facebook's chief executive, said traffic for video calling and messaging had exploded. Microsoft said the numbers used using its software for online collaboration climbed nearly 40% in a week. With people told to work from home and stay away from others, the pandemic has deepened reliance on services from the technology industry's biggest companies while accelerating trends that were already benefiting them. Amazon has muscled in on the brick-and-mortar retail for years, but shoppers now reluctant to go to the store, turning to the e-commerce giant for a wider variety of goods like groceries and over-the-counter drugs. Streaming services like Netflix have dampened box office sales for movies in recent years. Now, as movie theaters close under government orders, Netflix and YouTube are gaining a new audience. Companies were already dumping their own data centers to rent computing from Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. That shift is likely to speed up as millions of employees are forced to work from home, putting a strain on corporate technology infrastructures. Even Apple, which once appeared to be among the American companies most at risk from the coronavirus because of its dependence on Chinese factories and consumers, appears to be on a good footing. Many of Apple's factories are nearly back to normal, and people are spending more time and money on digital services. That's not to say the major technology companies shouldn't be worried. Advertising, the lifeblood of Google and Facebook, tends to suffer during economic downturns. The stocks of Apple, Microsoft, Amazon, Facebook, and Google's own parent company, Alphabet, have collectively lost more than $1 trillion in market value from a month ago when U.S. stocks traded at record highs. And Microsoft and Apple have cut their short-term financial forecast because of slowing consumer spending. Beyond the biggest companies, it's more of a struggle. Communications tools like the video conferencing service Zoom are now essential, but ride-hailing firms like Uber and Lyft and property rental sites like Airbnb are seeing customers vanish and are being targeted by the government. The $3.9 trillion global technology industry will suffer this year, though just how much remains to be remains unclear. In December, the research firm IDC forecast a 5% worldwide growth for sales of hardware, software, and other stuff, but that may not be anywhere near where we end up. But when the economy does eventually improve, big tech could benefit from changes in consumer habits. That music tells me we are done. I want to thank Steve Ray for braving the world. I want to thank Michael Oden. God bless him. Comes in uncomplaining. Okay, I'll just stand at the board and do whatever I need to do. We love Michael here, and everybody should too. I'm Nick Francesco. Thanks for coming in. Listen, be good to each other this week. Stay safe. Be a little bit patient. Be a little bit understanding. Not everything is working quite the way it used to, and we all hate change, but change is where we are. So be good to one another, and we'll see you next week on the next edition of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites right here on Jazz 90.1. See you in 166 hours.